Hello, everyone. Good evening for those of you in Europe. Here in North America, it's afternoon. It's nice to see everyone. When you travel, you encounter the unknown a lot. Or at least it's something that you don't usually, that you may be familiar with, but you haven't encountered for a long time. Or it's a bit like your own culture, but not really. And so I've been doing this for the past week now. I arrived a week ago today. But I've been in two different cities, so that also is a change. And so I've really been doing, a practice of embracing uncertainty. Uncertainty in the sense of course, I know how to speak, I know the people I'm with. I grew up in this country, although it's nothing like it was when I lived here. I'm familiar with even the place. The city I'm in now, because this is where my mother lives. But at the same time, I'm really entering the unknown in a way that I don't usually. Of course, every moment is unknown. This uncertainty of every moment we need to embrace. And it really has come very close to me with the fact that this is a culture where you need to drive a car all the time. And I don't usually drive when I live in France, where I live. I don't need to, and I'm not allowed to, actually. But here, I have to. And so I've plunged into this uncertainty and unknown of driving a car. In a city that I don't really know, in a car that I don't know because it's a rental car. And this morning I had to drive my sister and my brother-in-law to my mother's house. And I had this moment where it was so clear to me that it requires a practice of non-distraction to drive, which those of you who drive all the time, you don't even think about it. You know the level of distraction you can allow and the level of distraction that you can't allow when you drive. But because they don't do it very often and they don't know the city in the car, I have to be really attentive. And I could even see the thoughts that were kind of like parasites that I could grab onto, and then I would be distracted, and that would be dangerous. Or even the distraction of thinking, oh, it might not even be distraction of thinking what I will do later this afternoon, or what I will say in the Dharma talk, or may not even be that. It might be thinking, oh, I don't drive very often. This is dangerous. I'm not going to do it well. I'm taking my family's life in my hands. Even becoming caught up in any kind of discourse like that became so clear to me in that moment. It was a beautiful morning, bright sunlight, and it's just like crystal clear, this moment. And it also requires being one with, or in balance with, maybe is a better term, the dynamics and the processes of what's going on. So I have to really be in balance with the car, in balance with the road, in balance with the other people who are driving, and the in balance with the car that implies the right speed limit, the seat the right way. The mirror is the right way. The hands on pushing the pedal with your feet, holding the wheel with your hand, all of this stuff. And driving's a really good metaphor, actually, for the rest of our life, for life every moment. Because if we are to be fully present in our lives, we also need that. We also need to be in balance with the dynamics and the processes of that are shaping the world. We can't, we can try to change things. We can try to not have it. You know, I could say, well, I am going to drive the other direction on this side of the road. Well, we know that there would be big problems if that happened. Or I could say, I'm going to drive faster than the speed limit. And we know that would cause problems. Or I'm not going to signal when I'm turning left or something. The same thing applies to our daily life, to every moment. We really need to be in balance with it. You know, and we have this, well, let's see. I read a Tibetan teacher recently who said that to encounter the unknown, to really enter into the unknown, the uncertainty of every moment, we need a method. And we need to use that method very precisely in order to directly experience things as they are and not try to change, confine, restrict, reduce, whatever it is. So for us, our method is just sitting, like what we just did for 30 minutes. We just sit and we let things arise and we don't enter into them. We try not to change them, confine them. You know, I found myself in these 30 minutes like grabbing onto a thought, drifting off to think about something else, feeling tired after lunch, you know, all kinds of things. But our technique, our method helps us to not hang on to that, to just let it go. Same experience as driving. So if I'm having those kinds of parasite thoughts, I need to let go of them. Otherwise, I'm not really paying attention to what's happening on the road, what's happening with the people around me, the cars around me, the lights, the whatever it is. And we think that this would be a contradiction, that we have this method and we hold to it so that we can be free. Sounds like a contradiction. Of course, we know, as in the Buddha's story of the Buddha said, you know, when you he gave the example of if you need to cross a river, you have a raft. That's the method to get across the river. But once you've crossed to the other side, you don't need to keep carrying the raft around. You put it down and then you just walk. Or my grandson, at the moment, he has this little like push, this kind of like a little thing on wheels that he can push. He's just learning to stand up and he can actually walk a few steps with this thing that he's pushing. So the method is that he has this little thing that he pushes. He's not ready to let go of it yet. I mean, he can let go, but he won't be able to walk after that. He will, and he gets frustrated and falls down and then has to crawl. And we are like that too. So we have this method which helps us to train, to be attentive, to not be distracted, to be in balance with or one with what is, and then we can let it go. So while I'm sitting there in the car driving, I'm not doing like mindfulness meditation or something. I'm just paying attention to what arises and responding accordingly to what arises. If I become caught up in some kind of method while I'm doing that, When we learn, of course, we have a method when we learn to drive. I still remember some of the instructions when I learned to drive from the instructor. But I don't think about that. And one of the things I remember was he said, and I do sometimes think of that. He said, when you're taking a turn, you should look in the direction you want to go. Whereas you can think that you would be just looking right in front of you, but you want to look to where you want to go. And it's very useful as a method or a technique. But actually, when you do it, you're not like thinking, am I looking in the direction where I want to go? You're actually just making the turn. But you trained in this looking in the direction you want to go so that you can put down the raft, the method, and just do it. And our method helps us to not hang on to or try to get rid of what arises in our daily life. Hang on to things we like, push away things we don't like. It's basically what happens. I'm driving in the car and I think, oh, I don't like that car in front of me. I want to be behind a different car, or I want that car to get off the road, or something. We can't do that, right? We just have to be in present with what is. And then I no longer have an opinion about that car, or at least I'm not hanging on to the opinion of that car. Sometimes we then can pass the car because it's blocking our way or something. But if we cling to our opinions and our ideas about it, then we know there's a lot of trouble. And so when I say like embracing the uncertainty, every moment is uncertain. So like we're all sitting here and we don't know anything actually. You hear what I say, but you don't really know what I will say next. We're responding very quickly in our heads with what is being said. We understand the words and then we process them and something happens, or something's happening behind us and we have to respond to it, or we're thinking about it. But we don't really know what is. We can experience it. And often we experience our opinions about it or our ideas, but we don't really know what it is. And that can be frightening. Here in the United States, it's only what, how many days before the presidential election? And everyone's worried. Everyone I've talked to. Of course, everyone I've talked to shares pretty much the same opinions as I do. And so, we're scared in the same way. I'm sure that people who don't share my opinions are also scared in a different way because no one knows what's going to happen. It's really, really uncertain. And that can give rise to great anxiety. Some people are really anxious and worried and frightened and planning contingency possibilities of living somewhere else, or I read today that some mayors in major metropolitan areas are preparing their administrations and their laws so that if Trump wins, he can't send in the army and take over their cities and deport people and restrict access to abortion and things like this. So, it's serious. And maybe people are overreacting. Where is the fine balance between anxiety and just saying, okay, it's uncertain and staying with it, or becoming desperate and making all kinds of elaborate plans and then becoming angry and fighting with people. There's so many different possibilities of how we meet uncertainty, of how we embrace uncertainty. Suzuki Roshi, I think it's Suzuki who said, we meet uncertainty. The only way we can do it and stay at peace is to have absolute confidence in our fundamental nature. So in the like Thich Nhat Hanh, I think it's Dale who posted on the WhatsApp group this thing about Thich Nhat Hanh looking at a leaf. I don't know if people saw it, but of Thich Nhat Hanh. So he says, you see life, you see that you are life and the tree is life. That's seeing the true nature of things. And there is an easing of anxiety when we see that, when we truly see the oneness of us all, of it all. Doesn't, it's hard to see how that can apply to this uncertainty that is so present around a, presidential election or something. And yet it does apply. It does apply. Because again, if you take the uncertainty of driving a car, if you became really caught up on in the absolute uncertainty of what will happen during your travel in the car, you would not be able to drive because you would you couldn't possibly overcome that anxiety, anticipating all the possibilities of what could happen or not happen. So yeah, yesterday was an experience of that. I just suddenly remember this. I had taken my daughter and my son-in-law and the baby. I think that was all who were with us. No, my mother was with us too. Anyway, we wanted to be back to my mother's house to watch this interview with Kamala Harris that was going to be broadcast on live on television yesterday. We knew we had to be there. It was at 5 o'clock. This sit there, right? Well, traffic doesn't necessarily cooperate. I don't know where I'm going in this city, so we had, dueling instructions from my mother and from my daughter looking at the app, and the baby's crying and took longer to shop than we thought. And, things happen. Shit happens, right? And so it was clear we were going to be late. And at first, my reaction, I was really not happy. I'm thinking the only thing I wanted to do all day was to watch this thing at 5 o'clock. And they had all this complicated stuff they wanted to do. And I'm the one who has to drive. And I just like, docked it. Okay, let's get there as fast as we can. But if I get caught up in that, we might all end up in a car accident and we'll never see it, right? We got there and then my mother didn't have her keys. And so we had to go in through the garage with the code. We get in the house and nobody knows what the, you have like 500 television channels in America. Because no one ever watches that channel, Fox News. Nobody knew what the number of the channel was. And so, by the time we got connected, I think we saw the last 7 minutes of the thing, probably, but by that time, I had long since let go of it because I have this method that I've so much integrated through these years of sitting that I could let go of it, that I could not seek to become caught up in some other narrative, some other discourse. So these are really concrete examples that I'm sure you can all, to, in different ways, relate to, because we all have these experiences every single day. And the possibilities of the possibility to be free in those moments is always there. Always. Doesn't mean it's easy. The freedom, you don't really know what it will taste like or feel like, but it's there. It really is. And I'm not sure that Suzuki's, I don't know how useful that is, have absolute confidence in your fundamental nature. I don't know how useful that is. I know what he means, but I just mean for us in our practice, in our daily lives, I'm not sure what that means really. It's more like, yeah, that having absolute confidence comes more from practicing the method, I think. And therefore, it's not like we have to think about, oh, I have to have confidence in this. It's just that's what has happened. You know, like I say, you walk through the field at dawn and your shoes and your jeans get wet. You didn't walk through it to get wet, but that's what happens. And our practices like this method that we use, that's what happens. We become free. We do. And we can therefore embrace the unknown differently. Yeah. Anyone want to add something, or question or something to keep the conversation going or something? João.
Yes. Good evening, everyone. Yes, I was feeling very close, I guess I could say, to what you were just the last couple of minutes. This this trust in, so you, because you were saying probably the way Suzuki Roshi says it, maybe it's not very, very helpful. And so you were trying to. So this trust in the, and I was feeling very close to this experience of this trust in. And it's what we call not knowing, space, yeah, it's this space, and maybe I don't usually think in those terms, you know, and oh, I have trust in this space, I have trust in this not knowing. I don't usually think like that, but maybe because of continuously, regularly being in touch with that experience of not knowing, in everything in my life. Maybe that's it. I'm trying to keep it simple. Maybe an example can help. So I recently, so I was away in the country for a couple of weeks, and then come back, and then there was this need of trying to figure out many things, especially professionally, because I don't professionally, I'm not, I don't have a career, so it's not a very stable. I'm not coming back to a job. I was at least, it's not like a big vacation. I was on vacation. I'm coming back to my job, so there are decisions to make. So in terms of, I have project freelance projects, and then I also felt, you know, I need to go back to school and find a schedule in a school. So there was these 2 weeks, they were very they were it's been very much, that experience has been very much alive, this openness, this not knowing, several possibilities, limitations of one side, limitations on the other, like in terms of hours and time that I need to do all the different things that I need to do, and think about the bills that I need to pay. So there are all these elements, but they were, they were inserted in this space, not knowing. And then things change. Things change because, you know. So now I have apply I applied for a schedule, which I found, which is works good. Actually, it's a new thing. It's not something I've done before. So, but you know, I still don't know if I'm going to be accepted. I still have to wait. Tomorrow is Friday, so I don't know, tomorrow or maybe just Monday. I have no idea. But it's still, so things changed. The it's like a, I was going to say that this not knowing, the not knowing changed, or the space changed. I don't know if that's what I want to say. I'm not sure. But it's still, I still experience that space. I still experience that not knowing. Any, even if I get accepted at some point to go to teach, to go to school somewhere, even then, it's, that experience is possible, I would say. This is, I try to keep it simple and clear. Yeah, this is as much as I can express, I think.
Thank you. The fundamental nature of life, say, is impermanence. Of course, the circumstances change. That's because it's impermanent. But the nature is always that. Grisha?
Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Amy, for your talk in American time and being here. I was exactly going to ask you before you speak to link, if you could link the impermanence with the, I don't know the name, the space, the Trust in the space of not knowing, in the not knowing space. About your talk, I think, yeah, it's very serious, the part of American questions and European. I think, I don't know, I think we are starting to protecting our constitution for people in the right wing if they come, don't overpower, if we still a democracy, and you should do it also. I don't know, the Senate and whatever, something like that. Because yeah, it's a problem, this kind of power, in power based policies. People do it by strength, I don't know. It's really it's something for us to worry. We have history, we know what can happen, and it's important people do that. About anxiety, I can understand that very much. And when I'm caught in it, I forgot completely impermanence. Completely. I get overwhelmed with the possibilities. Yeah. Because they tend just to scale up. You are caught in a cycle of it's a despair. But I know impermanence, and I understand the concept of trusting in the this is not an easy trusting in the not knowing space, I think is that. So yeah, but mostly you have to let go, yeah. And if you let go, you feel threatened. You feel threatened, it comes to and okay. Well, but if you could, the you did, you just did it, but comment a bit more. I was liking very much your where you were, all you and João and people that talked until now going. Thank you.
I'm not sure what do you mean, comment on what?
In the link, I don't know, with impermanence and not trusting space and the trust in the not knowing space.
Well, the nature of the not knowing space, what you call it, that's impermanent. It's impermanent. It's impermanence. Things change all the time. There's nothing doesn't change. Otherwise it's dead. Life, the nature of life is change. Whether it's growth, decay. Again, that image of in the Thich Nhat Hanh story of the leaf was once vibrant and full of life. It's still full of life, even though it's falling, it's fading. You know, I had this experience. I hadn't talked to my mother yesterday. My mother's 96. She hates the fact that she's getting old and she can't walk as well. And she fell, and she, you know, she forgets things, and she really just hates that. And she's dependent on everyone. I mean, she lives alone, but she's still very dependent. And then meanwhile, in the back seat, there's a 9-month-old baby who is also totally dependent and crying because nobody understands what he wants and needs to be helped to walk and move and everything. So it's kind of like there are two different ends of the spectrum, and we begin and we end in kind of the same way, but yet very different, of course. But they're just different manifestations of life, those two ends of the spectrum. And then there's everything in between. It's just different manifestations. And if we think of that, If we can relate to that, then we have a different experience of aging, of the impermanence that is our life, actually. Go on.
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Good evening. Yeah, this story about the car, it came up to me today. Actually, I was thinking about that because yesterday I was talking to a man who was listening to had listened to some podcast and about Buddhism, and he got very confused about dualism, and he said to me, how is Zen related to dualism? Is it a dualistic, non-dualistic practice? And I don't understand what it means. And because he doesn't have an experience of meditation, I said, you know, it's actually quite easy to have the experience off if we look at it. But and then what came up today for me was like this precisely this example of driving and how we can, and you were talking about to be one with, so kind of this is the other side of it. The difference that it is when we're learning how to drive and we're paying attention to everything and we're not really one with the situation, I mean, we're just focusing on absolutely everything and just like our mind is I need to pay attention with this, I need to pay attention with that. So I was linking that to the experience of dualism. Me trying to pay attention to all these various items. And then when we know how to drive, we're able to just really do it. But in between, there's also the possibility of having that experience of driving while listening to the radio, while talking to someone, while thinking about what we're going to do. So there's a spectrum of experiences in doing exactly the same thing. Apparently doing exactly, I mean, doing exactly the same thing, but from the inside, it's very different. It's very, very different. So it's one is really dualistic, the other one is really just to be one with. I like the to be in balance with dynamics of the situation. I wrote that down. That's another nice way to say it. And to me, the question that comes out of it is like the, so once we have these various experiences, what's beneficial? How do we want to, what does it change for our life to have to drive with stress because we must not forget about anything, or just doing it, or doing it while thinking about 10 other things. Very different experience. It's up to you, up to us to choose what we want.
Yeah, and the fact of beneficial, we can link that to karma or something, where if we are not one with what is, so we're driving the car and we're not paying attention, well, there will be a consequence to that. And it probably won't be beneficial to the well-being of yourself and the other drivers on the road. If you're not paying attention, you're distracted, you're on your phone, or you're talking to somebody, or you fall asleep, or you drink too much and you don't react appropriately or something, and then there's consequences, and you harm people, and you harm yourself. And as Joe says, if we don't even take it that far, we say that, if we're distracted or we're not one with or something, and then we feel anxiety and we harm ourselves. And when we harm ourselves, then we have a tendency to ha have acted with harmful behavior towards others. So there's the consequences and the consequences. Yeah, that was kind of a charged word, consequences. But as we so often say, if you cultivate, or even a Thich Nhat Hanh said in that thing, so you plant the acorn and then it becomes a tree. If you don't plant the acorn, it won't become a tree. If we plant the seeds of mindfulness and attention and presence, and then develop wisdom and compassion, well, then our movement and our the consequences that occur around us in the world will be different than if we don't. And right, like Joa said, we always, so we always have a choice.
When you talked about the only way we can, it was something like this, I don't remember exactly. The only way we can face uncertainty is through the fundamental confidence in our true nature. Was it that?
Something like that, yeah.
Immediately, this image came to me when I was in a car crash. There was these 2 seconds before the crash where I knew the crash was going to happen, and even though I had that certainty about the crash going to happen. There was the whole uncertainty of what was going to happen before that. And it was like I was somehow okay with, I was like how do you say I a moment of letting, absolute letting go. Like I knew that, I'm at the mercy of who knows what. And of course, this I didn't do it voluntarily, just something that happened. But I guess in the daily lives, in our daily lives, maybe we can, it's not as clear, maybe, to see the uncertainty, the absolute uncertainty of the next moment.
Yeah, that's right, huh? Absolutely. And that that's why we say extreme situations shake us out of our usual habits, of course. And which is part of the logic behind the Sesshin format, where it's very intense, you're food deprived, you're sleep deprived, you don't do your usual stuff, thing that you do, as a way of moving us towards that space. Like, a car accident, it's extreme. I had the same experience in a car accident, exactly the same thing. Or, it can be extreme illness, or it can be something else that shakes us from our usual way of behaving, so that we do perceive suddenly, wow, that's the true nature of things. And we can experience that total letting go, which is that's the absolute freedom of, that's true peace. Of course, then very quickly the car hits whatever it's going to hit, and then it's all. But even that, once everything has been settled and we see kind of where things are, there can be a moment too of that it can last that moment. And yet that is the true nature of things at every moment. And we can always access that moment of clarity, of freedom, by training with our method, that when we talk about, using a method that will allow us to experience directly what is, that's it. Or Mizumi Roshi used to say, this practice It's a way of cultivating the ground so that accidents will happen. Not car accidents, but accidents so that we awaken, so we have that gap, that moment of clarity. Well, and to come back to an example, I said I saw the last 7 minutes of this interview with Kamala Harris, which was supposed to be an interview. She accepted to be interviewed by, someone who works for the Fox News Network, which is the Trump network, actually, a very conservative network. And she accepted to do it. And it was basically a debate. The guy wouldn't let her talk. He kept interrupting her. And so then they were like talking over each other. Became a debate. And I saw that this morning where the journalist who was writing about it said, well, she was thought she was going to an interview and she actually went to a debate. So if she had been fixed on her idea of what would happen and had prepared responses anticipating the questions he would ask, it would have been lost. She had to be able to respond, okay, this is what he's doing, then I respond. All the while remaining true to, she kept saying to him, I'm speaking. I'm trying to respond to your question. Can you not interrupt me? And he would continue talking over her, and she would do it again and again. And so I'm listening to her, and I'm wondering now, is what she's saying, is this just some thing she's memorized? Is she like, does she have everything prepared, or is she really just responding naturally? She knows her stuff so well that she's just responding naturally. And it seemed to me that she was responding naturally. And we all know that if we go to some situation with an idea of what will happen, it's probably not going to be good. I mean, it will be false. Our presentation or our response or whatever it is won't be true because it's prepared. It's like when you come to, interviews with a teacher, of course, we all have a tendency to want to prepare what we're going to say and what we want to talk about. It's actually the best way, though, to meet the teacher is to prepare nothing and just plunge into the not knowing. And that's where the truth is. That's where the truth within you is, the truth within the teacher is, the truth where the meeting is. And so I think yesterday, Kamala Harris, the truth, that was it. The truth was really presented clearly for everyone with this guy doing his interruptions. And then the commentators on that channel saying, oh, she became angry because, women, they always become angry, right? And that's bad if women are angry. She wasn't angry. She wasn't angry. She was just forceful. It's frightening to let go of all our preparation, anticipation, and expectation. And yet, that's where we are really true. That's where we are really free. That's where we can truly meet the other, the moment, the circumstances. And respond with wisdom and compassion. And then, as Joa said, act with what's beneficial. Because our practice, is about doing no harm, or our intention is to do no harm. Risha.
Are we saying our true nature is impermanence?
Well, the nature of all things is impermanent. It changes, everything changes all the time. It doesn't have a fixed identity, right? It. And neither do we. So our nature is we are impermanent and we are interconnected. And so sometimes we say codependent. We have all these different ways of putting it. So it's not that our the nature of our nature is that it's impermanent, let's say, something like that. Its quality is that it's impermanent. And that's what we share. We share. We share the that's what makes us the same. And then what makes us different is all the ways that it manifests. And our practice is about living with that, what seems like a contradiction, the sameness and the difference. And if we don't truly see the sameness, well, then we will focus only on the differences, and then we persecute and reject and torture and create conflict and try to hang on to what we think is ours when we don't see the sameness, when we don't see the oneness.
What is our true nature?
What is our true nature? Well, that's a really good question. Look at it. Yeah.
I'm almost embarrassed, but
No, I mean
okay.
that's the fundamental question, yeah. So I guess the question is more, what is your true nature? Not our. In the Koan Mu, where the monk asks Joshu, does a dog have Buddha nature? Well, he's working on that question of what is my true nature. And so he's looking around and he's saying, well, does a dog have it? So this is the eternal question, right?
Okay.
So it's a good place to be to ask that question. There are no silly questions or no embarrassing questions.
Because I'm getting the feeling that everybody knows.
Aha, of course.
But
Everybody knows I'm the only one who doesn't,
me.
right? Yeah, of course. Yeah, I know. I've struggled
Or
with
I should
that.
know by this time.
Yeah.
Get confused.
Yeah, no. Look, ask. That's great. Better to do that than to pretend, Joa?
Krisha, it just happened that last week during the retreat we had, the second day I was supposed to do Dharma talk, and then it went a totally different way because of various events that took place. But it just happened that I was about to do something about Buddha nature, extract from a text from Dogen, and it just happened that I had that under my eyes. But it was a, so I'm just going to read it because it's just a question of Nagarjuna, someone who asks him. It's Nagarjuna, so 14th ancestor. Who says, if you want to see Buddha nature, first let go of your pride. And the man said, "Is Buddha nature large or small?" And Nagarjuna said, "Buddha nature is neither large nor small, neither broad nor narrow. It is neither goodness or rewards. It has neither death nor birth." There is more to it, but I won't go into it. But it just was just under my eyes when you said that.
Thank you very much, both. Really.
And so you see, if Nagarjuna was talking about it, and this was, I forget what century he was, but so this is, this is not a new question. It's an ongoing question. Didn't come last week, right? Okay, maybe we'll stop there with that question. And thank you all.